One, two, is this on?
Please, ban the basketball housewives.
Set the dog bounty hunter coming to an end.
Who the fuck? What the fuck? Why?
My comic book nerd brain just cannot accept it.
That's the dumbest fucking premise for a show I've ever heard in my life.
This wasn't no movie. The smart thing was to say yes, get up, and leave the room. But then I thought to myself, what if this was a movie? Look, you, the plane you flew in on, them shoes, your socks with the bell on it, your gay ass accent, them cheap ass cigars, your yuck mouth teeth, your hairpiece, your chocolate, Guy Ritchie, Prince William, the Queen. This is America. My president is black and my Lambo is blue, nigga. Now get the out of my hotel room. And if I see you in the street, I'm slapping the out of you.
Another exciting episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles. I'm your host, Tim D-O-double-G, and I'm by myself again tonight. But never fret, I'll still make sure to put on an entertaining podcast for you. I'm recording on December 22nd, 2012, the day after the Mayans predicted the world would be over for us. But we are still here. And I am grateful for that. No thanks to the Mayans. But I digress. Let me go ahead and do some plug-in for our social media accounts. You can follow the Click Nation podcast Twitter at The Click Nation. My Twitter is at TimDOGG98. Of course, we have a website, TheClickNation.com. Like us on Facebook. Facebook.com/TheClickNation. Subscribe to our channel on YouTube, YouTube.com/TheClickNation. Follow us on Google Plus. Add us to one of your circles. Just search for The Click Nation. And I'm also planning on starting a Click Nation community on there as well. So be on the lookout for that. Subscribe to us on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. And if there is ever a time you want to send some feedback that you'd like to have read on a future show, send that to theclicknation@gmail.com. And I also want to send a shout out to Dirt at the Pop Culture Network. That's popculturenetwork.com. They provide me with the advanced reviews for the comic books that you see me review on our website. And also a shout out to comicrelated.com. They also allow us to share our podcast on their website. So head on over there and check out all the different comic book podcasts that are on their website. So this is another Comic Book Chronicles dealing with Marvel Now. The plan is for me to discuss and talk about some of the different number one releases that have come out in Marvel Now since my last Comic Book Chronicles episode, which you, of course, can find on the website, theclicknation.com. Just search under the podcast section, and you'll see the last Comic Book Chronicles and the latest Click Nation podcast as well. So first up, I'm going to talk really quickly about Marvel's next big thing, live blogs. They've still been doing the live blogs. There haven't been as many in the last couple weeks as there were, I'd say, in the early part of December. But one of the ones I want to talk about real quick is the one dealing with the Uncanny Avengers. They announced that Daniel Acuña, I believe that's how you say his name, will be taking over art on Uncanny Avengers with, I believe, issue 6. And that picks up a storyline taking place in the past with Thor taking on, young Viking Thor taking on Apocalypse, which is pretty interesting because in Thor God of Thunder, Jason Aaron is writing a story where Thor is taking on the God Butcher, and it takes place in the past, present, and future with young Viking Thor in the past, present day Thor, and then King of Asgard Thor in the future. So the first storyline arc in Uncanny Avengers is going to deal with Red Skull. Then they'll move on to Apocalypse. And also they've teased that Kang, the Conqueror, it will also be involved since he patterns himself after King Rama Tut. So I guess that's how he'll be involved since Apocalypse also is from the Egyptian time. I know Marvel had high hopes for John Cassidy being able to stay on art with Uncanny Avengers, but the bottom line is Marvel's even known that he can't keep a steady schedule going. So at first my initial reaction was to blame Cassidy for Uncanny Avengers being way behind, but maybe it could also be partly Marvel to blame. Maybe they had too high hopes for Cassidy, or they may even have set a timeline up for him that in the end wasn't sustainable. But either way, both sides probably can be to blame for that. But I like Marvel being proactive and going ahead and finding a new artist to take over quickly for it. I wish it could be Oliver Corpil, who's going to do guest pencils on issue 5, but I know he doesn't really do ongoing series either. So I know Daniel Acuña did art in a couple issues of, I believe it was Avengers, back before Marvel Now. I wasn't entirely crazy about his artwork, but at least the preview pages they released for Uncanny Avengers, it actually looks pretty good, so I think I'll be able to take his art. Next, I want to quickly plug some articles I found on Newsarama's website dealing with Marvel Now. These just recently came up on the website, so if you go look, you'll probably still be able to find them. They did a top 10 list of things they like so far about Marvel Now and 10 things they don't like so far about Marvel Now, and I pretty much agree with both lists. One of the big things that people aren't liking about Marvel Now is continuity and trying to figure out where these issues of Indestructible Hulk and Avengers and Captain America, where they all take place and which issues come before the other, because you have things where Iron Man in Avengers number 1 is wearing his new armor, which he has on in the Iron Man series, but then Captain America doesn't have his new costume on until the end of Avengers 1, but I believe he's already wearing the new uniform in Captain America number 1. They complain about that, but that doesn't really make sense to me, because it seems like since Marvel Now started, Captain America's been wearing the new costume in every single issue I've seen him in, because I want to say in Aviette's Consequences, he even has the new more movie-style outfit on. And I know in Avengers, he changes into supposedly the new costume, but honestly, I couldn't tell the difference between the outfit he had on in the beginning part of the issue to what he wore at the end. So maybe I'm just not looking at these things as closely as everyone else. But my point on continuity is I don't pay attention to continuity anymore, and it's mostly Marvel's fault. And I think Marvel probably wants you not to pay attention to it, because ever since they started having people like Wolverine and Spider-Man, Captain America, Iron Man, once they start having them appear in 6+ issues a month, that's when I threw continuity out the window, because there's no way that Wolverine can be leading a school and Wolverine and the X-Men appear in these Avengers stories, appear in other X-Men stories, appear in his own solo title. It just doesn't make sense. So I don't even try to think about continuity anymore when it comes to comic books. Like I said, it's better that way, because each writer gets to tell the story they want to tell, and they don't have to try to pigeonhole when things take place in their story. They can just tell the story that they want to tell and leave it at that. Writers already have it hard enough having to have their titles be hijacked for these the yearly event that takes place that ends up interrupting everything in the Marvel Universe. So, and the reason I also bring up continuity is because Newsarama also has a article out discussing the Marvel Now continuity glitches. And I'll post links to all three of these articles on our website once I upload this podcast. So you can also check them out as well. Let's see. Let's talk about some titles in Marvel Now that I plan on dropping. Because, yes, I'm not enjoying every single book that the Marvel Now is putting out. That would be almost impossible. There are some that I'm not even trying to read, period, because I know they're not going to interest me. Things like Journey into Mystery and I just lost my train of thought. The Journey into Mystery. There's one more that I can't think of. It'll probably come to me later. But three titles I'm dropping as of right now are Iron Man, X-Men Legacy, and possibly Thunderbolts. Iron Man, because I don't care about this opening arc dealing with the extremists. I believe, I want to say it's going to be issue 6 of Iron Man that picks up with him, his space stories as a member of the Guardians of the Galaxy. I'll probably pick that opening arc up just so I can see what they do with him, what Kieran Gillen does with Tony up in space. But if that's not interesting either, then I'll go back to not reading Iron Man, which is a shame because Matt Fraction and Salvador LaRocca did such great work with Iron Man and the Invincible Iron Man series that I want to read an ongoing Iron Man story, but right now it's not looking like I will be, which is fine, I suppose. X-Men Legacy, I don't care about Legion still. I didn't even read issue 3 fully. I just sort of skimmed through it and said, okay, I've had enough of this. I'm done. Even with the tease of the X-Men appearing finally in issue 4 to confront Legion. Unless I hear or read good things about issue 4, then I won't be reading Legacy. And Thunderbolts, I want to like, because I like the lineup. But the art isn't that good by Stephen Dillon. And I think Daniel Way, I want to say, is doing the writing for it. And the writing's all right, but this team, nothing between issues 1 and 2, nothing's really happened. I expected them to be taking on these, I guess I expected them to be taking on other superpower beings, but that isn't the case so far. And Deadpool has been all right, but again, I never really read any of the Deadpool solo series before the Marvel Now. Is the new Deadpool series is funny, but it's not something I really feel like I need to keep up with. So Because I think after, like, what's going to happen after this initial arc of him chasing down all the undead presidents? You know, let's see, A plus X. I'm starting to think of more titles now that I'm going. A plus X is all right. It's not a central reading to me. But if people like seeing team ups, then A plus X is the book they want to read. Red She-Hulk, I did read for a little bit. It wasn't Red She-Hulk took over the Singular Hulk title, I believe, and it's under the Marvel Now banner. But I don't really care about the Red She-Hulk. So, again, another title. I read the first, let's see, was it 59, 60, 61, or 60, 61, and 62. I can't remember what three issues it were that I read. But I may try to start reading Captain Marvel. And since that recently started over with the brand new number one a couple months ago, I think I want to go back and read it from the beginning and get caught up. At least that's the game plan. So, and also, I was able to flip through Dark Avengers, which is, I guess, the old Thunderbolts, who are now under the Dark Avengers title. And they're, like, in this alternate dimension, and I don't really care about them. So, again, I'm not going to be reading it. And let's see, other stuff to talk about. Uncanny X-Force just ended with issue 35. It's not a Marvel Now title because it's going to be relaunched with the new number one. But I wanted to talk about it real quickly because I heard so many good things about Rick Remender's Uncanny X-Force that I eventually started back at the beginning, and I've gotten all the way caught up. And it's probably been one of the best, at least, team books I've read probably in the last year. Because I read all of them starting back in August, I want to say, is when I started reading Uncanny X-Force. And Opeña's art, and I think Ribic did some art on it as well. Both of them were just great. And just this whole storyline with Apocalypse and Angel and Dark and Archangel, and then series arc, Final I won't say Final Destination, but that's the movie. I forget what the title of the last arc was. It's Final something, but basically closing up all the loose ends and things with Phantomettes and Genesis, the cloned Apocalypse as a teenager, things with him going on. I of course recommend everyone go and read Uncanny X-Force, and even check it out in the new Marvel Now when it, I think I want to say it launches in February or January with Psylocke leading the team. So, and also people complain about, you know, there's no comic books featuring women in Marvel, or they're about to have two team books dealing with women in Fearless Defenders, and Uncanny X-Force might as well be a woman title because it stars like four or five women and Puck is the only male member on the team. So there you go. And also to tease some upcoming things you'll see on our website, theclicknation.com. We're planning on doing a Amazing Spider-Man 700 recap and review podcast. That'll be probably going online within the next week. It should be plenty of time after 700 comes out, which is planned for December 26th, that Wednesday. That's going to be that and Avengers Spider-Man 15.1 are the only Marvel books coming out the week of Christmas. So I suggest everyone go and read those two books, and you have to read them in a certain order. You have to read Amazing Spider-Man 700 first, and then read Avenging Spider-Man 15.1. Read both those books, and then make sure to listen to the next comic book chronicles, which will be all on Amazing Spider-Man 700. And I plan on having some special guests sit in on that podcast, so you won't have to just listen to my voice. So definitely check that out. Along with, I will also try and post a review of Amazing Spider-Man 700 also, so you have something to read. So look out for that. And there's also going to be an end of the year podcast that may be online by the time you listen to this. It may not. It probably be. It should be uploaded the same week as Christmas is the idea. I actually couldn't make that podcast, but the rest of the Click Nation was gracious enough to do a podcast, and I believe their topic that they spoke about were things in 2012. So, and there should be, and then another podcast will be probably by the time this, hopefully by the time this is uploaded, another podcast will be seen on the site, and that's going to be from Leroy Jetstream, and I believe he's calling it the Time Zones. So a lot of podcasts coming to Click Nation. I know there have been people that were worried because we were putting out podcasts a little less frequently than we had been. You can blame that on the holiday season. A lot of us were working or just busy during the holiday season, so it was hard for us to get together to do a podcast. You wouldn't think it would be hard getting, I guess, four of us together all at the same time, but in actuality, it is, especially when all four of us have different schedules. So trying to find a time during the week where everyone's free to sit and record for 2+ hours becomes a hassle, but we enjoy doing it. So in the new year, you should expect us to be back on our regularly scheduled program. So now let's get into some discussion on some of the various Marvel Now titles that have come out since my latest podcast. First up, I'm going to discuss Avengers number 1 and number 2 from Jonathan Hickman and Jerome Opeña. This was, of course, one of the Marvel Now titles I was highly anticipating for a couple reasons. Number 1, this will be my first time reading an ongoing title from from Jonathan Hickman. And that's because I never read his Fantastic Four run, but I do plan on going back and reading the entire collection, even though it spans a lot of years. But again, I've heard so many good things about it. I got to check it out for myself. And of course, Jerome Opeña is on doing art on this initial arc, and he comes from doing time on Uncanny X-Force. So with both of those men on the creative team, another thing I also like about the series so far in this short time frame is the expanding of the Avengers roster. Avengers, they've always had an expansive number of titles under the Avengers umbrella, whether it be Avengers, New Avengers, Avengers Assemble, Mighty Avengers. But this time they're just expanding the roster for the adjective list Avengers. And Tony Stark and Steve Rogers both get together and they decide it's time for the team to go big. They have all these different threats in the Marvel Universe, and they realize it's time for the roster to expand so they can combat these different threats. So they decide to start recruiting new team members. But first, they take the movie roster of Captain America, Iron Man, Thor, Hulk, Hawkeye, and Black Widow off to Mars to face off against a new threat, a new character called Nihilo, maybe is how you pronounce it. And the team is beaten pretty quickly, and they ship Captain America back off to Earth, and after spending some time recuperating from his injuries, he assembles at dawn is the phrase they use. Bendis always made a point to use the Avengers Assemble catchphrase whenever possible. So Hickman's coming up with his own phrase, Assemble at Dawn. And there was one other one I can't think of now. But so at the end of issue one, we see the first expansive roster that they debut. And it's a lot of familiar faces like Spider-Man, Wolverine, Spider-Woman, Captain Marvel. But we also get some newcomers to be in Avengers. And let's see, there's Captain Universe, which I've never heard of before. Guy named Hyperion. Manifold. Cannonball and Sunspot from the New Mutants. Shang-Chi, however you pronounce it. Are some of the new members that Captain America's going to take back to Mars with him. So especially, of course, like Cannonball and Sunspot being Avengers, because I'm big fans of theirs from the New Mutants days, because I grew up reading at least sort of the end part of that title, and then as it transformed to X-Force. By Rob Liefeld. And Jerome Pena's art, again, is pretty good on this. I especially like the final image from issue 2, where they show Manifold teleporting the new team to Mars. And just like the image of the Flash on the Mars surface, it looked very sci-fi-ish and kind of even 3D. Some things I didn't like from Avengers 1 and 2. I didn't like how the movie team was taken down so easily by Ex Nihilo. And also, when Cap escapes the shuttle crashing back on Earth, all he basically does is just jump out of it right before it hits land. It seems like that would be a lot worse than jumping out of a speeding car going 100 miles per hour, because I'm pretty sure the spacecraft was probably topping close to 900 plus miles an hour. And also, I know they've already said the roster is going to be about 24 members once all is said and done, so there's plenty of time for these members to make an appearance, but it seems it's not like the Avengers roster wasn't already deep. So if they're trying to expand the roster and assemble a squad to take down this new threat on Mars, it seems like they would automatically go to people that they trust and they fought alongside before, which they do with Captain Marvel and Spider-Woman, Wolverine and Spider-Man. But where's Iron Fist, Doctor Strange, Vision, Giant Man, Wasp? These are sort of, even the older, these are classic Avengers like Vision, Giant Man, Wasp. But even sort of the newest Avengers who've been around the last 5+ years thanks to Brian Bendis, and that's like Iron Fist and Doctor Strange, it seems like they, at least in the beginning, they would be chosen to help them fight Ex Nihilo, but they go for people that they haven't even fought beside before, like Hyperion and Captain Universe and Manifold. I could see having Manifold because they need someone that has teleportation powers. But yeah, that's the only thing I found odd so far with Avengers. And once the new year hits, I believe New Avengers comes out in January, so that's another book that Hickman will be writing, that it's gonna deal with the Illuminati team that was introduced by Bendis. So look out for both those books. And they're supposed to be, you can read them separately, but they're both going to sort of tie together, at least in the background. So I kind of like that idea. Kind of like what Hickman did with Fantastic Four and FF. So, let's see. Avengers Arena 1 and 2. Yes, the very controversial book from, I believe it's Dennis Hopeless is the doing the writing and Kev Walker doing art. And the basis for Avengers Arena is basically Marvel is copying Battle Royale and Hunger Games. Arcade comes up with this new Myrtle World, and he kidnaps 16 teenage superheroes, puts them on this Myrtle World, and tells them that they have to fight to the death until only one person is left, the victor. And it involves characters from Avengers Academy, The Runaways, and Darkhawk, and also entirely new characters introduced for this story. People, of course, are going crazy over it online because they don't want to see some of their favorite characters killed senselessly. And, of course, Hopeless has been on... if you go to MTV Geek, I know that's their Twitter handle, I believe. Not sure what the website is. Probably mtvgeekonline.com or something similar. But there's been some video interviews with Hopeless where he talks about Avengers Arena. And I found those to be a pretty informative. He at least makes it sound like he has it's going to be more than just mindless. Okay, these kids don't know each other. Arcade says we have to kill each other, so let's kill each other. It's going to be more than that. At least that's what Hopeless says. So, remains to be seen. In the first issue, we get our death, and of course, spoilers, I'm going to talk about what happens in the issue, so if you don't want to know, stop listening. But Metal from Avengers Academy is the first casualty. He dies protecting his girlfriend Hazmat, and he's actually killed by Arcade himself. So, and then issue two, character Lady Hawk something gets killed just by flying into the invisible dome covering the Myrtle World. And it followed that number two follows the story and kind of gives us the origin of Death Locket and also some of the new characters from the Braddock Academy, which I don't believe existed before Avengers Arena. So, like I said, gives origin for characters and lets us get into the head of what these characters are going through on this Myrtle World. I actually was very impressed with issue number one because, like many readers and fans, just the premise of Avengers Arena didn't intrigue me enough. But after reading number one, it's an issue I'm going to read. It's a title I'm going to read every week or month, however often it comes out. So looking forward to keeping up with that. And my theory on what is going on in Avengers Arena is since Arcade has all these powers, like he's able to lift the students and he's impervious to their attacks and he's able to kill Metal by just a flick of his wrist or a snap of his fingers. Arcade never had these kind of powers before. So it's like, how is he able to do all this now? And my theory, along with Dork Geekus on Twitter, we've both been saying that we think this is all happening in some virtual reality where maybe even after every person is killed, they're just taken off the grid and everyone's safe and sound and probably unconscious in some room together. So that's the theory. It'll be revealed that these characters really aren't dead at all. And even Dorkikus even went farther saying that whoever wins this competition will end up taking Arcade's place and probably become a major villain, which I like that theory also. It's different. So I'd be curious to know everyone's reactions to Avengers Arena. I've read a couple online, but listeners to this podcast, I'd be interested in knowing what your thoughts are as well. So you can, of course, send feedback to theclicknation@gmail.com or leave comments on the podcast post once this goes online. And I'll make sure to read them on the next episode. Cable and X-Force number 1 and 2. Again, a title very much I was looking forward to because I'm a fan of the X-Force brand because I grew up reading it. And I'm a big fan also of Salvador La Roca's artwork. So this title deals with Cable assembles a team to supposedly for a very specific reason, which we'll learn as the series progresses. Team members are Cable, Domino, Dr. Nemesis, Forge, and Colossus, with Hope Summers being a supporting character. I also like that this X-Force team are a band of outlaws. They're wanted fugitives on the run. And we don't find out as of yet why they're on the run. Well, we know from issue 1 that when the Uncanny Avengers show up at the scene of this this crime, they find the Uncanny they find Cable's X-Force team there, so they automatically think that they had something to do with all these people being dead, which, of course, they probably don't, because there's always misunderstanding in comic books. And Havoc, being the leader of Uncanny Avengers, gets a great moment where he gets to punk Cap by tossing his authority around. And this was something that people were very worried about with Uncanny Avengers, because how can Havoc be chosen as leader when the team already has Captain America, Rogue, and Wolverine, who have already led teams before? And especially a team that has Captain America on it. You know, it seems like any team with him on it should be the default leader. I like Hope being a supporting character, because Avengers vs. X-Men dealt a lot with her, and it dealt so much with her that I thought that she should have been chosen to be on the Uncanny Avengers team, since it deals with human mutant relations. But it made sense for her to be tied with Cable, who's her adoptive father figure. And Cable, we also learned that Cable's got some new powers since he's been cured of the techno-organic virus by Hope. He did lose the use of his right eye, and his left arm, which used to have the techno-organic virus in it, is now atrophied. I hope I said that right. And that's the reason why he has this big, huge mechanical arm that he uses. At least that's the reason for it. So, like I said, Cable also has new powers, which I guess I won't spoil, but it adds a new wrinkle to his character, because since so many people look at Cable as being this outdated person, because he was originally created back in the 90s era of big guns and belt buckles. So just a different twist to add to him. Captain America 1 and 2 are both out. It's being drawn by John Romita Jr., and Rick Remender is doing the writing. And Captain America has found himself transported to Dimension Z, which is this dimension that mad evil scientist Zola has created. And it's a place where he's been able to do a bunch of different experiments, and there's all these mutated creatures that are in this dimension, and now Cap is stuck there. And when he was able to escape Zola's base of operations, he took a baby with him, which we've seen grow up to be this young boy in issue two. Supposedly it's supposed to be Zola's son. And we've seen that it's been when issue two picks up, it's been a year since Captain America's been stuck in Dimension Z, which raises all kinds of questions regarding, you know, how does time go by differently in Dimension Z compared to our world. And issue two deals with basically Cap and the kid still trying to survive in this weird dimension. And through Cap's internal dialogue, we hear about all these different creatures that they've had to sort of stay away from while they're in the dimension, and all the different threats they've faced, which is kind of cool, like how the ground and their landscape changes by the day or even by the minute. And Cap can never get a firm grasp on how much time has passed because time is different there. So after Ed Brubaker's epic run on Captain America, Remender's trying to do a more sci-fi story compared to Brubaker, who did more espionage and super spy type stories. So I'm still will stay reading Captain America. I like it. I trust Remender to tell a story that I'll enjoy. John Romita Jr.'s art, still hit and miss. I remember growing up in the 90s, I used to hate John Romita Jr. As an artist. I just never liked his work. I remember him doing issues of Spider-Man, or it was probably Amazing Spider-Man back then. And I just wasn't a fan of it. But now his art seems more tolerable to me. I still don't love it, but I can put up with it for now. Indestructible Hulk 1 and 2. Mark Waid is the artist, and Unil Francis, I think, is doing the art. Hopefully I said that name right. Let me look it up real quick, because that's definitely one name I want to get right. Indestructible Hulk artist. Let's see, what does Google tell me as the artist? Oh, Lin-Neil Francis Yu. It's the full name of the artist. And I used to not be a fan of his back when he was doing art on New Avengers. But just like Romita, it seems like his art, it seems more, before his art seemed more wild. Maybe it was more the inking on it, maybe, perhaps. But now the lines seem more cleaner in Indestructible Hulk. So the premise of Indestructible Hulk is Bruce Banner has come to terms with the Hulk, and now he wants to use the Hulk for good, so he offers his services to S.H.I.E.L.D. on one condition. Banner, of course, is a super genius, but in Marvel Universe, Banner's not known for being a genius. He's known for being this rampaging monster, and he wants to be considered, or he wants to be thought of in the same terms as Tony Stark and Reed Richards and Hank McCoy. And, you know, they're known for being these great scientists. So Banner wants to leave his mark on the world through science instead of violence. So he wants S.H.I.E.L.D. to provide him with a lab and assistance so he can make new inventions to help the world. It kind of reminds me of what Dan Slott did with Peter Parker in Big Time in Amazing Spider-Man. Peter got a job with Horizon Labs and gets to be this great scientist and have creations. So, and in turn, S.H.I.E.L.D. gets to use Hulk as this bomb to drop on any situation. And in issue two, it guest stars Iron Man, who spends the issue questioning why Banner is doing this, which I wasn't too crazy about, because like their relationship in Avengers Assemble, they have more of a playful relationship, Banner and Stark. In Incredible Hulk, Wade writes Stark as being more, you know, oh, why are you doing this? You know this isn't going to work out for you, Banner. Maybe looking at it a different way, it's more playful. But at least during my initial run, I was left wondering, like, why is Stark being so critical? And final book I'll talk about tonight is Thunderbolts 1 and 2. Nothing happened in Thunderbolts. Number one, at least. We see General Ross go around recruiting all the members. And the recruitment for Punisher is different from the others. And then in issue two, we see their first mission. That's about all I can do to explain Thunderbolts for everyone. I know I said earlier I'll probably drop it, but I'll probably still at least read along to see how it's going. But after maybe the first arc, eh. And I just thought of something I left out of my review for Avengers 1 and 2. In Avengers 2, we got to see Captain America and Iron Man go around and do their recruitment process for all the new and returning team members. Forgot to say how much I enjoyed that, because I always like seeing a good recruitment montage. You know, they go to Wolverine and say, we have beer. And Wolverine says, okay. They go to Spider-Man, we've got money. And he's all thankful. Thank you, thank you, thank you. So that was kind of cute. So that about wraps up my discussion for Marvel Now as of the date of December 22nd, 2012. I want to thank you all for listening. I'll, of course, do more Comic Book Chronicles in the future. The next Comic Book Chronicles coming up will be the Amazing Spider-Man 700 review. Spoilers, of course, because we'll be talking about everything that happened in it. So make sure you read that before listening to the show. Follow us on, the website, theclicknation.com. Follow the Click Nation Twitter account, theclicknation at theclicknation, I'm sorry. My Twitter is at timdoggg98. Facebook.com/theclicknation. Subscribe to the Click Nation podcast on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. The Comic Book Chronicles is also on the same feed, so subscribe to that. You'll make sure to catch all episodes and any future podcasts, also more than likely, because Leroy Jetstream will have his first episode of his Time Zones podcast up, and it'll still be under the same feed, at least for now. I may separate everything into different feeds, but I just don't feel like doing that right now. If you ever send feedback to theclicknation@gmail.com, and that's about it. So thanks for listening. We'll be back with more Comic Book Chronicles. Stay tuned. Keep reading comic books. Let me know what comic books you're currently reading and what you think about Marvel Now. I'd love to hear some feedback from the listeners and readers. I am Tim D-O-double-G, and I'm signing off.
This wasn't no movie. The smart thing was to say yes, get up, and leave the room. But then I thought to myself, what if this was a movie? Look, you, the plane you flew in on, them shoes, your socks with the bell on it, your gay-ass accent, them cheap-ass cigars, your yuck-mouth teeth, your hairpiece, your chocolate, Guy Ritchie, Prince William, the Queen. This is America. My president is black and my Lambo is blue, nigga. Now get the out of my hotel room. And if I see you in the street, I'm slapping the out of you.
Fourth pack is back, cause a mass destruction. Guess who's here? The bad boys arrest me. Just boxing competition when the war is the mission. Not no mercy, see the race like the street. If you don't know, you better find out the war pack. It'll prove a point. Number one, best believe that you don't want to tussle with them. I'll be there for them. Come in the grave with them, you're never walking out again. So you're back on the war pack. Turn your back on the wolf pack. You might wind up in a body bag.